Welcome to Pandemic Zen. This is Paul Gerstein. A few days ago, I was talking with a Zen student who brought up the concept of oneness, which is a description for the condition of awakening, enlightenment, Kensho. In this state of oneness, the usual dividing line between an interior self and an exterior world is suddenly wiped away. Now, there are degrees of clarity and depth of this experience, but for one who's always felt trapped behind this invisible dividing line, this experience can be overwhelming, joyous, an immense feeling of relief. There are many descriptions of this kind of experience in the Zen literature, and the desire to have this experience for oneself, to decisively leave behind the isolation, anxiety, loneliness of standing apart. It's a powerful motivator to practice Zazen, to participate in silent retreats, and otherwise intently pursue Zen practice. So this student and my brief discussion of the word oneness triggered for me a few days later a memory of a TV commercial I saw back in the 1950s when I was just a kid. And it was a commercial for Colgate with Gardol. It was surprising later to find one version of this black and white commercial on YouTube. And I watched it, and clearly my memory was pretty accurate. In this commercial, the camera was on one side, and on the other side was a baseball pitcher who wound up and threw a fastball full speed at the camera, the viewer's vantage point. But the ball bounced right off of what they called an invisible shield, just the way Gardol would protect your teeth. This memory clicked for me with the notion of oneness the student and I had discussed. So this invisible shield, the internal one, protecting us from fastballs of big and small traumas, situations, people we may be afraid of, it develops during very early childhood, and it gets thicker and more impenetrable over time for most of us. We can't really see it, but we definitely feel it. We can't locate it precisely, but we know that it's there. On one side, there's something that I call me. On the other, everything that isn't me. People, circumstances, things I want and things I don't want, mountains and rivers, etc. Because this barrier is invisible and we can't locate it precisely, we also can't say what precisely is being divided up. Does my side include the body, feelings, thoughts, memories, habit patterns, all the things that only I know intimately? Or are all these items on the outside part of an external world? They're certainly connected to the world. They're outcomes of events in the world, genetics, evolution, things I've learned wrongly or rightly. Maybe the me side is just the knower. Nothing that's known. An entity residing somewhere inside my body, peering out through my eyes, feeling my feelings, remembering my memories. It's so unclear where to draw this dividing line. Working on a breakthrough koan, and one of them is the koan, what am I or who am I? We gradually de-identify with every characteristic and every particularity that makes up the total sum of what I call me. They're there for sure, but they aren't the essence, the original, basic, essential me. I can get to see this clearly as I keep up the inquiry over a long period of time. Looking intensely inwards, when thoughts, feelings, body, mind, and even time disappear. That is, when one is intensely present, but not identified with any forms, any particularities, yet being utterly awake, alert, focused. This state is called samadhi. It's also called, sometimes, a state of darkness. The first rank poem goes like this. In the third watch of the night, before the moon appears, no wonder when we meet there's no recognition. In this utter darkness, there's still a sense of standing apart. The poem goes on. Still cherished in my heart is the beauty of earlier days. I can't see anything, feel anything. Time is absent. Space is absent. But I'm very much here, a pure knowing entity, only knowing itself. Yes, there's a wanting for something vaguely remembered, deep in my heart, a state of oneness that's still so elusive, some beautiful leap to be taken. To get past this stuck place of darkness, it's said that the bottom of the black lacquer bucket falls out. That is, when we wake up out of this peaceful, profound, pure awareness of samadhi, it's like the bottom of a black lacquer bucket falls out. Sometimes this critical step is called a turning about in the deepest seat of consciousness. What was me before, that in my samadhi appears as the one and only thing, is no longer on one side of a dividing line. This is waking up to the whole real world, the actual world. No borders, no dividing line. Looking out in this state is just like looking in. Nothing's actually fundamentally changed, except that the line is gone. It's something immense, undivided, but also utterly obvious. In this awareness, Dogen said, mind is no other than mountains and rivers and the great wide earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars. The Zen master Basui said, to get here, you have to, quote, break a walking stick made out of a rabbit horn, unquote. In other words, to break out of something that never really was. Rabbits don't have horns, and I don't have a dividing line, even though I've depended on it. I've leaned on it for so long, it was literally a given to me. In seeking for the state of awareness, it's almost universal to believe that one needs to get rid of the small self, the ego, with all its pettiness, fears, habit patterns, selfishness, or to transform it into something perfected, Buddha-like, compassionate, bodhisattvic. But even if we can somehow enter this condition for a brief period of time, the small self always comes back. The habits crop up. And now I'm playing a spiritual equivalent of whack-a-mole. Do I have to get rid of the ego? Must I perfect myself to have this awakening for more than just a brief moment of joy? In other words, is this ego self the rabbit horn walking stick? that Basui said I need to break? Or is it the invisible shield that seems to separate this ego from everything else? Today I want to take up a koan from the loose collection of 100 or more what are called preliminary koans, which are practice koans that we study after a typically transient awakening with a breakthrough koan, such as Who Am I? These practice koans, preliminary koans, help us solidify and clarify our shaky, tentative awakening as we get used to working with more complex koans that have stories to them, people, circumstances, as found in the many hundreds of formal koans in the various collections that will be assigned by our teacher. This koan that we're going to take up today is a bit silly, but that's part of its message. So here it goes. A man placed a duck egg in a large bottle. Eventually the egg hatched, and a little duckling, tended by the man, gradually grew larger and larger until it no longer fit in the bottle and was getting claustrophobically trapped. The punchline of the koan is this: how can you get the duck out of the bottle without breaking the bottle or killing the duck? Now, there's only a demonstration of the resolution of this koan, your answer to this koan. No verbal reply is going to cut it. How do you get out of this prison of a bottle without smashing it, without killing the duck you feel yourself to be, which one could say is getting rid of the ego self with all of its faults and foibles? You might say that the very act of smashing the bottle is also killing the duck. They're so crammed together here, so you can't do that. The koan asks us to escape this suffocating glass bottle, this invisible shield, without breaking anything, killing anything, abandoning anything. It's a kind of leap. But how do I take this leap? A koan in the Mumonkan collection says, take a leap off a 100-foot-high pole and manifest your body in the 10 directions. Can I take this leap as a duck? A silly, ordinary duck? All my neuroses, all my feelings, thoughts, memories, do all of those have to go first? If so, I'm pretty screwed, because I need this ego self to operate, to deal, to love, to cry, to care, to empathize, to be a human being. Yasutani Roshi said to a student in Sesshin, working on the koan Who Am I? No matter how hard you try, you won't find an entity called me. The key word here is entity. So the student responded, then why am I even asking the question? And Roshi said, because you can't help yourself. You're always asking why, who, what. You can't just take the world and yourself exactly as it presents. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here. Maybe a different answer to this student might have been, you are compelled to ask, who am I? Because you place this feeling of I inside of a bottle. You turned it into an entity, something with characteristics passing through time, separated from everything else. Yes, you feel this me, but it's not an entity. The duck koan is telling us, don't get rid of it. Just clearly see that it's not trapped on one side. In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha says, there is no separated entity, no separated self or separated ego. There are thoughts, feelings, habits, desires, and only I know these things, but there's just no border, no separation from the vast universe with which all of these things that only I know are inextricably interwoven. This duck-in-a-bottle koan refers to the small self trapped inside a bottle as a duck. It doesn't say lion or dragon, it's just a duck. I've got my faults, my weaknesses, my silliness, my traumas, my neuroses. That duck? I don't have to kill it? Get rid of it? The great Zen master Rinzai once said, there's nothing in particular to realize. And I'll say in parentheses, there's no bottle here to be broken. There's nothing in particular to realize. Just let go of Buddhas as opposed to sentient beings. And again, parenthetically, you don't need to be perfect first. Just let go of the notion of Buddhas as opposed to sentient beings. You don't have to change into anything special to kill off this stupid duck. You're already out of the bottle because there's no real bottle. There's nothing to realize, nothing to figure out, nowhere to go, nothing to accomplish first. Once again, how would you demonstrate the truth of this? The demonstration must be decisive, immediate. No thinking, no theorizing, because you can't get to the true demonstration via that method. You just have to show it. You have to demonstrate your original freedom. Just be fully a duck outside the bottle. So let's just be this duck right now. Can you do that? You have to feel it clearly. Feel this limited self, this me, this sentient being. Don't kill it. Don't get rid of it. Don't ignore it. Just be it. Because right now it's simply there. Let's just stay real and not be fake. So feel me. Look right into it clearly. It's clearly a feeling of me. It's normal. We all have that. It's a feeling that often keeps us safe, that promotes our welfare, our survival. The brain evolved over millions of years to make this feeling. A part of the brain called the default mode network creates this feeling of me. There must be a survival advantage to creating a me, because we all have it. It's okay. It's not bad. It's not wrong. Don't kill this duck. That's not a healthy way to try to be free. The me feeling is a sensation. You feel it. You also see a flower, hear a song, taste an ice cream cone. Why do you put the me sensation inside a bottle and everything else outside the bottle? You believe it's inside, but believing that doesn't make a real bottle, an actual bottle trapping you. Here's the very crux. This sensation of me has never been the problem. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to get rid of it. It's a feeling. So? It's just there. So? It's not a separate thing. An entity, as Yasutani told the student, that you can't find. It's always been a feeling of me, not an actual subject. A subject is inside a bottle. A feeling is of something outside the bottle. What if it's all outside, all on the same side? If that were true, then you won't find an entity called me, because there's no line around it. I gave this feeling a name. I took care of it. I fed it. I watered it. And it gradually got bigger and bigger until it seemed totally trapped, walled off, all alone. But feelings, thoughts, books, clouds, rivers, mountains, people, circumstances, the me feeling too, they're all on the same side. Yes, they're there, but there isn't any dividing line. It's the dividing line that's the real problem, the basic illusion. You don't have to kill any ducks, and you don't have to break any bottles. If there isn't a bottle, there isn't an inside and an outside. You're not actually trapped. You've always been free. Just be who you are. But don't create in your mind an imaginary line between something you identify with and everything else you don't. This no other side is called in Zen oneness. Or sometimes, not one, not two. There are cars and people and the feeling of me, not one. But no bottle, no invisible shield, no separation, not two. Don't get rid of anything. When the feeling of me arises, just say the words inside, me with everything else, me and cars, and buildings, and the cold air on my face. Now, do you have your demonstration of freeing the duck from the bottle, not killing it? Can crying be a part of that demonstration? How about joy or boredom? How about the bird sound over there? Is there anything you can think of that can't be part of your demonstration? Now tailor that demonstration to the actual facts of this case so that your answer is specific, appropriate, not some generality or truism. Make it real. No bottle. No entity. No dividing line. Nothing to break. What a relief. We'll end there.